She thinks that Melania won't go to the White House, or there's a strong chance that she'll just stay at Mar-a-Lago. And that would kind of open up this opportunity for Ivanka to be like the hostess of the White House.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby. It's Tuesday, May 7th. Today, I'm joined by Tara Palmieri with some insight into how Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner are playing Donald Trump's possible return to the White House. Are they in? Are they out? As Tara explains, with Jivanka, it's always just kind of complicated. We also look ahead to the Democratic National Convention in Chicago and whether comparisons to the mayhem of 1968 are overblown. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode of The Powers That Be. Hey guys, it's Peter. I travel all the time, especially in an election year. And as we all know, what luggage you choose matters. Briggs & Riley is my personal favorite because their luggage performs. It's extremely durable, has amazing features that make packing and getting around easier, and they have the best lifetime guarantee in the industry. If your bag is ever broken or damaged, they will repair it free of charge. No proof of purchase needed, no questions asked, even if an airline damages your bag. All features were created to address customer pain points for a better travel experience. They're extremely durable with rigorous testing and premium materials to last for life. And one thing I love, they're supremely smooth, shock-absorbing wheels for easy gliding through your travels through whatever airport you're zooming through. And hot off the press, the Simpatico collection of hard-sided luggage. It's new and improved and just launched on BriggsRiley.com. That's Briggs-Riley.com. It has the new one-touch feature, which allows you to expand your luggage, pack it, and then compress it to its original size. So a carry-on can still fit in the overhead compartment, and that's just one of the new features. It's available in black, navy, and olive. So check out all the Briggs & Riley offerings at Briggs-Riley.com. That's Briggs-Riley.com. Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome to The Powers That Be. I'm joined today by Tara Palmieri to talk about politics. We're going to talk about the Democratic Convention a little bit later. But first, I want to talk to Tara about something you might have expected, given their waffling on the past about this, Ivanka and Jared. But Tara has some reporting that Ivanka Trump might come back into the Trump political circle for later in the campaign, maybe back into the White House after saying that she wasn't going to be involved. Tara, welcome to the show. Also, I need to shout out, Tara is the host of Somebody's Gotta Win, a podcast on the Ringer Network. Everybody check that out. Tara, welcome to the show. What are you hearing about Ivanka?
Well, Ivanka's just lately been poll testing her friends, her social group to see, you know, what would they think about her coming back to the White House or the campaign? And if she did go back to the campaign, when would be a good time? And, you know, the feeling is that if it did happen, it would be around the convention. So she wouldn't be dragged into this latest, you know, Stormy Daniels litigation. And she could kind of keep her brand clean of this, of the mess, of the tawdry porn star mess. Yeah, it's not really surprising, like you said. It's a feeling of perhaps boredom, or even more so than that, I would say that she sees that her father could actually win this. And she wants to use that platform, that influence that he has. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to me because when he announced that he was running November, 20th, 2022, right after the midterm elections, when he was blamed for the losses, right? The Republicans were supposed to take back the Senate, but all of his shitty candidates like Mehmet Oz and Carrie Lake, they blew it, right? And everyone's blaming Trump and he's polling so low. Even Ron DeSantis is beating him in New Hampshire and the party is just ready to move on from him. And it's like the saddest announcement you've ever seen. Even his team is begging him not to announce that he's running for re-election before the new year.
We did a podcast about this, Tara. I don't know if you remember. It was kind of in the months after you joined Puck. I remember talking to you about this specifically. We were like, because I was in New York in a hotel room doing this podcast. It was right after Trump announced. Both of us were kind of watching it. I think you might have been down in Florida at the time. And I was like, This is grim. Was Ivanka even at that thing?
No, she didn't show up. Jared went to kind of like flex because he was doing his foreign business deals. So he was there, but Ivanka was nowhere to be seen. And in fact, within hours, she put out a statement saying that, like, as much as she loves her father, she's done with politics, so don't expect her to be on the trail or anything like that. So this is a little bit of an about face. I mean, it's not public yet. I feel like they're floating it. They want to see how the reaction is, what friends will think. Is it time to come back? I mean, she's living in a pretty safe space. It's Miami, right? She's living in Florida. If she wants to go to Palm Beach, she'll be celebrated there. I'm sure she doesn't face a lot of, like, you know, resistance in her Indian Wells gated community. They just finished this amazing mansion, which, of course, means if they move back to, you know, DC, they'll have to give that up for a bit. I'm sure it'll just be waiting for them, and the kids will have to go to different schools.
What about Melania? I mean, she hasn't been totally in the spotlight. And by the way, Trump's campaign strategy this year is a little weird. He's obviously in courtrooms. He's not, you know, out there doing five rallies a day. He's picking and choosing where he's going. And so it kind of makes sense that, like, Melania wouldn't be out there with him generally. But what's her role these days in the campaign? Is she a advisor, confidant, or is she comfortable to hang back in Florida too and not really be in the spotlight?
Well, it's interesting because I would say on Super Tuesday, when he had a pretty strong night and it was official that he was the nominee, it would have been normal to have your wife on stage with you, or at least have her have some sort of presence at your party at Mar-a-Lago. But she was nowhere to be seen. And she did come out a week or so later to vote in the Florida primary with him. And when asked what her role would be, she said, stay tuned, right? Mm. I know that she saw with Trump's success that, you know, there was the threat of Jared Kushner coming back into the fold. And she really doesn't like the kids. You know, according to Katie Rogers, who's written this great book about the first ladies called American Woman, she writes that Melania called Ivanka the princess and that she really did not want Ivanka around. And according to my reporting at the time of the Super Tuesday event, I'd heard that Melania was feeling very isolated and worried that she didn't have enough people protecting her. She lost some really close aides like Stephanie Grisham, who went on to sell a tell-all book about her. Mm-hmm. She just didn't have anyone in her orbit looking out for her. And so she was kind of clinging to Kellyanne Conway, thinking if we could just get Kellyanne back in there, that would keep Ivanka and Jared away because those two clash with Kellyanne and she could have an ally within the Trump orbit, which might make her more willing to, you know, be involved in his political life. It looks like Kellyanne is not going to be joining the campaign anytime soon or at all. She just signed a podcast with David Plouffe.
That was weird.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. But she's pretty much made it known that she sees herself as a surrogate on the outside. And honestly, Trump doesn't have a lot of surrogates. Because the surrogates are crazy. They're like the MyPillow guy. Like, no one at least... He doesn't have a lot of surrogates on Fox. So he could use... He could use Kellyanne there, certainly, probably, and she's still advising him. They're still talking, so why not? I could see her, though, going into the White House for, like, a chief of staff role. But point is, if you bring Kellyanne to the equation, there's a better chance of keeping the kids away. And Melania, you know, Katie Rogers from the New York Times, she thinks that Melania won't go to the White House, or there's a strong chance that she'll just stay at Mar-a-Lago. And that would kind of open up this opportunity for Ivanka to be like the hostess of the White House, or like take on that, you know, first lady role, or take over the East Wing herself. So there's a lot of opportunity for her if Melania decides to stay at the spa in Mar-a-Lago.
That's fascinating. So your piece is called Ivanka Interrupted, and you did mention Jared.
Right.
I guess at the top of this podcast, I mentioned that people might roll their eyes at the idea of Ivanka, you know, floating that she might want to come back into the fold, because the knock on Jovanka the entire time Trump was in the White House was that, like, every time they saw his political fortunes sink, they would, like, leak on background to some reporter, oh, we disapprove. And then the minute his fortunes would climb, they'd come back into his orbit. But regardless of Ivanka, Jared has this, like, private equity fund now, and you mentioned that he kind of wouldn't want to be around Trump. He wouldn't want Trump back in the White House because it would raise all of these conflict of interest issues, because he's raised through, this is your reporting, through Affinity Partners, which is his investment firm, like $2 billion from Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund, for example, also money from Qatar and the UAE. So Jared wouldn't really be in the fold if Trump wins again, and you're according to the people you're talking to, at least.
Yeah, that's what they say. But at the same time, like, they're like, well, if he did enter, it would be last minute kind of self. I also don't think he really cares about conflict of interest, to be honest. I don't know how it would be enforced. There's a scenario in Trump's White House where they don't care about conflicts of interest at all. And I think Jared likes having at least an arm's length distance to his father-in-law, who could return to the White House, which could mm-hmm. just increase his power. So I'm kind of like, I see it both ways, right? Obviously, there are conflicts of interest, but I also think it might be irresistible for him.
Yeah, I don't think they've ever really cared that much about conflicts of interest, to be honest.
Right. And like the Abraham Accords, he takes like a lot of credit for that. I could see him wanting to get back involved. Exactly. Like, I don't know. How would he really divest? Unclear, but perhaps in this dictatorship Trump White House, it won't matter. And maybe there'll just be a lot of shitty press and he'll be like the Hunter Biden of the White House. But it really depends on, you know, what he decides to do and what his threshold is for that. I mean, he already, like, most of the money he's raised is from foreign funds, like Saudi Arabia. He's investing in Serbia and the Balkans, relationships that he built while he was in the White House. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about what he'll end up doing. And like I said, what my source that's close to both of them said, that if he did somehow, you know, get involved, it wouldn't be through the campaign. It would be like a last minute decision to get into the administration. Whereas Ivanka would maybe get involved in the campaign around the time of the conventions. I mean, she did, you know, she introduced him twice at the conventions, the first one and the second one. So I think it would be hard for her to resist that moment in the sun.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Tara, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, talk to you about the conventions after the break. Are you tired of sleeping hotter than hell? I sure am. I sleep hot. There's something crucial about sleep that eludes us when we're too warm, too uncomfortable, and too caught in the web of our own thoughts to drift off. And while curiosity fuels our days, science tells us that cool sleep recharges our nights. That's where ChiliPad by SleepMe comes in. Meet the bed cooling system that elevates the quality of human life through cool sleep. The ChiliPad bed cooling system is your new bedtime solution. I love it. It lets you customize your sleeping environment to your optimal temperature, ensuring you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. ChiliPad works with your existing mattress. It's a water-based mattress topper that continuously controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees, allowing your body to rest and recover. This isn't just about escaping the heat, it's also about optimizing your sleep for better health, more energy, and improved physical and cognitive performance, which I obviously need hosting a podcast. Chili pads are designed for one or two sleepers, so if your sleep partner likes to sleep at a different temperature, or you only need it for one side of the bed, that's okay too, and we know that's crucial. Plus, you can schedule automated temperature changes to trigger deep sleep. But when I'm at home, Chili Pad solves those problems. So trust me on this one. Visit sleep.me/powers to get your Chili Pad and save up to $315 with code POWERS. This offer is available exclusively for Powers That Be listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today with free shipping and try it out for 30 days. You can return it for free if you don't like it with their sleep trial. Visit www.sleep.me/powers because you're not just investing in better sleep, you're creating a better life.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/powersthatbe, netsuite.com/powersthatbe. That's netsuite.com/powersthatbe. Welcome back to The Powers That Be, everybody. I'm talking to my colleague and partner, Tara Palmieri, who covers politics with me. And on that topic, I should mention our new colleague, John Heilemann, who just joined Puck. Subscribe to The Best and the Brightest to get his newsletter in your inbox every Sunday. Excited to see what he does. Tara, I'm still formulating my plans for the conventions. Chicago for the Dems, Milwaukee for the Republicans. Whether I go or not, I'm just sort of like, this year, I feel like they used to be more exciting in the past. I don't know. But I just filed a piece for The Best and the Brightest yesterday about how I'm a little aggravated, just as a history buff, about all these comparisons to Chicago 68 for Biden. You know, Hubert Humphrey was nominated back then. The cops were in the streets fighting the Vietnam and civil rights protesters. There was tear gas. You know, you had racist cops and it was just mayhem all around.
Racist cops? Yeah. Still?
never heard of that. You know, the conventions in Chicago this time, it's half a century later. I don't know. It just feels like I do think there will be protesters in the streets. They're petitioning the city and suing the city of Chicago to get routes to march and demonstrate. It's not just, you know, pro-Gaza protesters. There's sort of abortion rights protesters, quite frankly, professional protesters who will protest anything who will be there. But the Gaza movement does have a lot of juice right now. It dovetails with youth dissatisfaction with President Biden. I don't know. I'm just curious. What do you think? I mean, do you think it's going to be mayhem in the streets in Chicago? What do you think?
Oh, I do, actually, just because the kids are going to be out of school soon. And I was talking to a Biden ally who's like, yeah, well, it'll be over soon because they're going to be out of school. And then I was talking to somebody else who was like, yeah, and they're going to be really bored. And
I think that's so true, by the way. Like, people aren't processing this. The semester ends. Depending on the campus, like next week and the next 2 weeks at all these schools, there will be some diehards who try to stay on campuses, I guess, with demonstrations. Like, people are going to go home. They're going to go to their summer jobs. They're going to go to their internships. They're going to have free time. I think you're right about that.
So I think, and I do have a bit of a theory. Like, I do believe that these kids feel very passionately about the war. Okay. But I also think they like the experience of protesting. I think it's fun. I mean, if there was a protest on campus, are you saying that you wouldn't go check it out? It's kind of like a big rally or like a rave or it's a experience. And then you get to be so close to history, the DNC. There's like a reason to show up for the Democratic National Convention. And clearly these kids who've been like chained into their houses basically during COVID are dying for some sort of experience in life. So I just think like on the psychology of like a teen that didn't even get their commencement or, you know, graduate, that they're going to make their way to Chicago to have like the ultimate rally riot experience. And so that's where I think this is going. I also think that the fact that there are encampments in DC, you know, you drive around, you see them, and they're not just college kids, like outside of the Israeli embassy, outside of Blinken's home, and they just won't go away. And everywhere Biden goes, he's facing protests. It makes me think that they'll still be a huge appetite for disruption. I think disruption is just like in the like fiber of everyone right now. I just think they're itchy. Like maybe it's COVID PTSD. I don't know. But this is just like more of like a psychological hunch, you know, and plus just kind of reading that room. But maybe I'll be wrong. Like maybe everyone's going to chill out and it'll be, you know, there'll be a true ceasefire. There'll be a deal. I don't know. But I just think like these, I think there's like a, just a whole, I don't want to say generation, but I think there are a bunch of kids that lost a lot of opportunities to like be around each other for many years. And they see this almost as a way to like not only stand for something together, but just to stand next to each other and to spend time together. And so I think that will be very appealing.
I think politics and protest for young people is very infectious. I absolutely agree with you. The camaraderie of being in something together and feeling like you're part of history, that's part of the appeal, you know, along with the genuine substance of why people are demonstrating. And yeah, I think I'm thinking back to 2020 when George Floyd was murdered and people came out in the streets. A part of that was, you know, at that point, people had been in their houses, like in a lot of different parts of the country, depending on where you lived, 6 months, 7 months. And like, you know, you got out to see people and be among humanity. And that was important in this generation. You're absolutely right. They started college. I mean, the people graduating now started college during COVID. And I think they are craving that connection. I think the biggest difference is, while I think there will be protests and it will be earnest and passionate, you know, one thing I just kind of discovered going back and reading about that past convention versus current ones is just the security aspects of it were just very different. Today, there's something that was passed by President Clinton in 1998 called basically designating something called a national security special event. And so the conventions that you and I have been to and will go to this year, they're basically all run by Secret Service. They've been on the ground for months. They're coordinating with the cops and police, law enforcement to create this huge security perimeter. And so, you know, the tendency, the impulse to look back at the cops beating the shit out of protesters in the streets right outside the venue, like, it's just like, doesn't, that it's almost like impossible for that to be recreated now because they create this kind of green zone perimeter around the convention site. So look, I mean, and I was also at the Republican convention in 2004 and 2008 in Minneapolis. Like there were anti-war protesters in 2016 in Philadelphia at the Dem convention.
Okay.
You know, the Bernie Sanders crowd was marching. There were some scuffles. There was some stuff here and there, but it just, I think you're right that there will be people on the ground. I'm just saying, it's pretty,
it won't be as crazy as we think. Like they're not gonna like light the place on fire or something.
Yeah, I just don't see the city being on fire. And then Brandon Johnson, who's the mayor of Chicago, you know, he was elected partly dancing around, like he was a progressive who wanted to possibly defund the police. Like he's the opposite of Richard Daley. Like he's trying to reform the police. I don't know. I just think that and he also supported a city resolution in favor of a ceasefire. I just, again, there's just all these little nuances and dynamics that make Chicago now different from Chicago then. But I think what you and I agree on, though, is, you know, the students will be out and about. They absolutely will be out and about. And where else would you go this summer other than Lollapalooza, which is
as
in Chicago?
You know what?
You can go to the convention and stay for Lollapalooza. Because I think it's after the convention. So assuming you can find a hotel room, that will be the hang up.
I love that you know when Lollapalooza is. This is, you are just way cooler than me. I never went to Lollapalooza. But I, you know, and I don't mean to dismiss the students either, to be like, they're just doing it for fun. I do really believe that they believe in this cause. And like you said, there is camaraderie in politics and organizing. That's why it's called organizing, right? Like, yeah, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe it'll be chill. I mean, I don't know. I always sort of expect the worst. Maybe that's because like my experiences with covering national politics have been through like the Trump era, you know, and everything really has been the worst. Like, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, January, like I could have never predicted January 6th would happen. Charlottesville, there's even even what's happening now on the campuses. Like, I just expect the worst will happen because everything seems to like be very extreme. Like, I think our country has become so extreme. So I'm like, no way anyone's going to show any moderation. And maybe I'll be wrong. And I'd be happy if I was wrong, by the way. But I've just like the things that I've experienced by way of covering Trump, even it really started when I started covering Brexit. I'm like, I think everyone's kind of lost it a little bit.
That's fair. And I should mention, correction, Lollapalooza is before the DNC. So you could go to Lollapalooza, then go to the DNC. And then, but just up the road in Milwaukee, there's another convention featuring Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has, you know, stoked violence in the streets before. So that it also feels like in the conversation of unrest in Chicago, that at least the possibility of unrest in Milwaukee should be mentioned as well by the press overall. Everyone go check out Tara's podcast, Somebody's Gotta Win, and subscribe if you haven't already. Tara, thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.